Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Pulse of the People, where we wake up Americans to fight for their democracy. It's Thursday, June 4th, 2020, coming to you live from New York, New York. I'm here with our legal moderator, Stephen Jackson. We have a very special show for you today during the protests in the wake of George Floyd with Earl Graves Jr., otherwise known as Butch. Stephen, our legal eagle, what is your perspective for black businesses during this stressful time?
Well, I'd like to focus a little bit on the Congress's handling of the PPP, the Paycheck Protection Program, and other stimulus assistance from the government in light of the coronavirus and also in light of the demonstrations that are occurring in Washington. Black businesses pretty much have been shut out. What can be done to steer PPP to black businesses that are disproportionately suffering from the economic ramifications of the COVID virus and overall discrimination? With regard to economic justice for black businesses have historically been discriminated against, not well received or supported by government and financial institutions. What can we do to change that? We have the right guests to try to get some answers tonight.
Earl Graves Jr., otherwise known as Butch, is president and CEO of Black Enterprise Magazine. He joined the company in 1988 after earning his MBA from Harvard. Under Butch's guidance, Black Enterprise has grown from a single title publication into a robust multimedia company. Today, the company delivers content across five platforms, including magazine publishing, two national syndicated television shows, professional development events, digital and social media. In 2000, he co-founded the Black Enterprise Greenwich Street Corporate Growth Fund, a unique private equity firm seeking to finance the growth of established minority-owned or managed businesses across various industries. Mr. Graves is also an active partner in S&C Robinson, an airport concessions enterprise formed in 2016. Butch received his BA in economics from Yale University in 1984, distinguishing himself both academically and athletically. As a four-year starter and captain of the Yale basketball team, he graduated as the school's all-time leading scorer and the second leading scorer in Ivy League history. He was drafted in the third round by the NBA's Philadelphia 76ers in 1984 and enjoyed a brief professional basketball career with the Milwaukee Bucks and the Cleveland Cavaliers. In 2002, Butch was inducted into the American Advertising Federation Hall of Achievement. In 2006, he was awarded the Jack Everett Volunteer Spirit Award from Boy Scouts of America. And in 2009, he was honored with the NCAA Silver Anniversary Award. Butch serves on the board of directors for AutoZone, Bermuda Tourism Authority, and a trustee for the Committee for Economic Development. In addition to serving on numerous nonprofit boards, Mr. Graves is a strong national advocate for the importance of education and athletics and served as an amateur athletic union head basketball coach for more than 15 years. Welcome to the show, Earl Graves Jr.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the invitation and I'm delighted to be speaking with the two of you this evening.
Welcome. Earl, what message do we need to send to Congress on the PPP and other issues surrounding black businesses to achieve economic justice?
Well, I think the other night I had a conversation with Robert Smith, who you all know, is the chairman and CEO of Vista, and Reverend Franklin Richardson, who heads up the National Congress of Black Churches. And this same discussion we were having on PPP, so the question is apropos, it's spot on. And I think, number one, people have to understand that the PPP program, the Payroll Protection Program, is a program that is that was administered by SBA, the Small Business Administration. And it the intent of the program was very good. But like in most things, you know, the deck was already pre-stacked against small businesses, although it was supposed to be for small business. Mm-hmm. Right? And so what happened is they announced there was going to be a $358 billion that was going to go out to help small businesses, and they defined and created what the definition of small business was and said 500 or less employees. And that was really the only litmus test, which should have been an indication to us that something else was amiss. And what happened is, and what we found out afterwards, is that the program was announced on Friday, April 3rd, and by Tuesday, April 7th, all the money was gone. Hmm. Now, let's put this into perspective. This was a $358 billion that was going to be going to small businesses of 500 employees or less. It's not physically possible to give that away to those number of businesses if, in fact, the program was not already pre-stacked, pre-drawn up, what have you. So what happened? We had 161 publicly traded companies who were somehow or another magically given funding. We had companies as large as the Los Angeles Lakers. You had Shake Shack and Auto Nation and all these other companies
really
who did not hit the litmus test at all. But yet, because they had, you know, the right lawyers, they were lawyered up correctly, and they could come up with LLCs demonstrating that the company did not have 20,000 employees, but they had 500 or less in a location.
Mm-hmm.
Net is all kinds of money was distributed to non-small businesses, which took the confidence yet again from black-owned businesses that they cannot catch a break. They can't catch a break even when you design something that's supposed to be helping us. You still find a way to violate a program that was designed to help small and minority-owned businesses. So everybody missed out on the first tranche. Then they just said, okay, we kind of missed the boat there. We're going to have a second tranche. And the second tranche was we're going to throw another $300 billion on top, $300-some-odd billion on top of the first group. And by the time that happened now, what was happening is that the large banks were inundated with applications. And I can speak about this firsthand because we went through this process. Black Enterprise went through this process, and we were actually approved for it. But I will tell you this. The only reason we were approved for it is because I knew somebody within Chase Bank who assisted us in getting the program through this. But not for my relationship. I would have been one of the 280,000 applications that they had to think about this. Now, just one bank had 280,000 applications that they were managing. So if you're a small black-owned business with not a direct relationship into someone senior who could try to help you navigate your way through, it just wasn't going to happen, right? It was a physical impossibility. Yes, go ahead.
But doesn't the government have a responsibility, though, to make sure that the banks don't hijack stimulus programs such as PPP. I mean, for the banks to, in a very dastardly fashion, select their best customers and pretty much exhaust the funds that were made available through PPP, particularly in the initial stages. Where was the oversight? Where was the governmental oversight? And where was, frankly, the morality in terms of the banking institution to make certain that the targeted entities for the stimulus loans and support was targeted correctly? I mean, what happened? Why did it dissolve to the point where the banks pretty much distributed enormous amount of money to their favorite customers, who we all know, customers of color?
It's very simple. It came down to the fact that they were paid a higher fee to administer. In other words, SBA did not administer this. SBA provided the funding and guaranteed the loans, and the respective banks are the ones that administer it. So what effectively happened is those banks, larger banks that were already organized, had this pulled together, and then they got a fee. So they're getting it. They were getting a fee and a guarantee that the loan was going to be repaid regardless of what happened. And so what's the obvious is they say, well, let's go to our customer base that we already know of. We don't have to deal with new people. And they never let the small or black-owned banks participate in the program, right, because they didn't have the infrastructure to be able to administer and put those loans out. So everything you're saying, Stephen, is 100% correct. What they ultimately had to do, and this was at being led by Robert Smith, who is, as most of, hopefully people know on this, in this call, is is the African-American black billionaire who runs a company, a private equity firm, The Capital, and a major philanthropist, what have you, who got engaged in the process and paid the tuition for all the kids at Morehouse last year, or paid off all the loans, right? So he got engaged and politically got it pulled together. So now what they have done, as yet, if you want to call it a third tranche, is to carve out $10 billion that's specifically been targeted for black-owned businesses, and it's specifically been targeted to go into lending institutions within African-American communities or black-owned banks. So, but if you think about that, that means you're going to get $10 billion out of what was a much larger number. And that was supposed to originally already had been done. So it's kind of like too little, too late at the very end. And there's going to be, but the average size loan that's going out right now, by the way, Stephen and Erica, is about $30,000. I mean, it's a very small loan in the grand scheme of things. So the numbers sound large, but what you're actually getting, or what most companies are actually getting, is dramatically smaller than that.
Wow. Another thing I noticed with everybody focuses on the PPP, but also with the EIDL, there were businesses that were able to take advantage of that and roll it into the PPP, whereas it almost took 30 days for information to get to the African American small businesses about the PPP. So they don't even have that appropriate time if they were able to get an EIDL to roll it in. Or any of that. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, again, in fairness to the Treasury, and I'm not defending them in any way, shape, or form per se, this was all rolled out very quickly, right? And it was done in haste to try to get some money into the hands of small businesses and private businesses, because at the end of the day, the government did not want to have, I mean, it already is dealing with a 20% unemployment rate, as 20% plus right now, as we speak. if they didn't have this program in place, it would be dramatically more. So the reason they made the program available in the first place is it's better for them to pay small businesses or companies the money or loan the money, quote, to them so they can keep the people employed than to let those people go on to the roles of the unemployed. Because then it becomes a government responsibility. Whereas if they do it the other way, it's a private responsibility. EIDL was a program that already existed beforehand, the Emergency Disaster Relief Fund. But, again, because it was such a short period of time between, oh, my God, we have COVID-19, what are we going to do, unemployment, furloughs, what have you, they had to turn around something quick. The intent was right, and I have to give credit to the Treasury Department for the intent being right. The ability to administer it leaves something to be desired, obviously.
Well, who should have been, in your opinion, properly been charged with overseeing this whole endeavor? When you're dealing with large amounts of money that it seems like has been distributed in a willy-nilly fashion, certainly in a discriminatory fashion, I mean, what would you suggest in the future the government do in terms of setting up an oversight entity or body that will be responsible for making sure that the goals, the lofty goals of the government, of these programs, are met?
Well, the primary thing you need to do is you need to start with what defines small business, okay? Small business, the litmus test that they use for small business made no sense to start with. The only litmus test they came up with was 500 employees or less. The majority.
You think that was arbitrarily selected?
That was the only selection criteria. It had to be less than 500 employees. And the craziness of
how they come up with that number? Are you aware of how that number was determined
I was not sitting inside the room when they came up. What I suspect is that the people who were drawing this up, in order to make sure that they would qualify to be able to get some of this quote free money, is they said, let's make this become the only litmus test. Then we can use some of our LLCs, right, and take a company and show that, well, we have an LLC that owns the restaurant in the city of Seattle. So we have a separate one in Chicago, a separate one owns in Kansas City. So this was done purposely. There's no question in my mind that people who came up with this did that. Now, if you were to do this correctly, my point would be, come to small business, ask me the question. It'd be very simple. In order to be a part of this program, you have to have 100 employees or less. You can't be a publicly traded company in any way, shape, or form. And you cannot say you have multiple divisions or something, because all divisions of whatever it is that is your small business cannot exceed 100 employees, cannot exceed $100 million in sales, and cannot be a publicly traded company. That would eliminate all of this nonsense, right? Because there's no way, right? Very few black-owned businesses, 94% of black-owned businesses are sole proprietorships. So the other challenge that we had as black-owned businesses is that the majority of people were basically employing themselves. So that payroll, the only payroll they had was themselves. And then they didn't have the record keeping or the other things that were necessary that you would need to, because you weren't employing a lot of people. So the deck was stacked against us before they even got started on this. But it was stacked against us because they had the wrong definition of small business.
And it seems like there's a push for a life raft to have some of these fintech companies work with African-American organizations, but even within their criteria, the businesses need a higher amount that a lot of sole proprietors probably don't even have to qualify. So they're still getting kicked out. What solutions moving forward would you suggest?
I'm sorry, I missed the last part. What
solutions on the pathway forward
would
you suggest?
Well, again, I think that hopefully future programs will not be put together in such haste, and there'll be meaningful dialogue with the appropriate people to make sure that we are getting input from real small businesses as to what's important. The other challenge that they've had with this PPP program is that even for those that were to receive the loan, so let's say you have a black-owned restaurant, right? You have a restaurant, a thriving restaurant that's sitting somewhere in, you know, that happens to be sitting in New York. It's a black-owned restaurant, what have you. Well, if the government has shut down and you get the loan, and let's say you got a $250,000 loan from the PPP program. If the government has shut down and said the restaurant cannot be open, and you can't the only thing you can do is you can have takeout, right? But you cannot, you can't have regular business hours. You can't have people coming in. You can't do this. You can't do that. What have you? And it's still closed as we speak, by the way.
Right.
If you were given the loan back in April, they only gave you initially. To June 30th, spend that money on payroll. Well,
exactly.
if your business is closed, how can you spend the money on payroll?
Right.
If you have to, because your doors can't be open if you can't do enough business on takeout to make this work.
Right.
So many businesses have not even been able to open as we speak right now. So they're talking right now. There's in legislation to extend the date past June 30th because they recognize, again, in haste, they chose a date, they tried to do this with the assumption, but the assumptions don't always fit. Many of these black-owned businesses that we're speaking about right now have not been open since mid to late March. Hair salons and, you know, restaurants and auto dealers, what have you. They have not been able to even have the doors open. So even getting the loan puts you in a precarious position because that's the other thing, which is here's the untold story. The truth of the matter is that we have been burned so many times that black-owned businesses are distrusting of the government. They think that the government may be trying to peer inside their business. They're going to use it against them. Do I really want to give them any information? You know, there's a lot of distrust that goes along naturally, right? Naturally. What would give you any indication that somehow the government is going to suddenly start treating us right?
Or is it a little bit of still confidence, that's for sure.
Yeah.
What resources can you give for small businesses, particularly African-American small businesses, to get their voice heard at this point?
Well, you know, I think it's interesting. It's not funny, but it's interesting that, you know, obviously we would be tone deaf not to discuss even briefly what has happened with George Floyd and what has happened with the yet another ridiculously racist incident which resulted in another black man dying in the hand of law enforcement. I think you can almost sense a groundswell of enough is enough, right? Mm-hmm. We truly have had enough. Black people have had enough. Even some white people have had enough. It's like it's so far over the pale that everyone is fed up. And I think what that's going to do is out of tragedy sometimes comes triumph. And I think for the first time, there may be an opportunity to get, you know, white businesses, to get politicians, white politicians, and I'm using white because these are the, you know, black people can't cure racism in this country.
Mm-hmm.
We're not the ones that can cure it. White people have to cure their own racism.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We can point it out to you, but we can't make you cure it. And so
exactly.
The reality is that right now, I think there's an opportunity for voices to be heard. And what we're looking for is not a handout. What we're looking for is an opportunity. We want the same opportunities. We want the same access to capital. We want the same contracts. We want to be able to compete and make a living in the same exact way. We're not looking for handouts. We're not looking for gifts. We're not looking for, let me give you a little something, something here, and let you, you know, the 10 of you compete for crumbs. No, put us at the table, put us at the big table with everybody else, explain the rules, and let us compete and make it right. Do the right thing. And I think for the first time in a long period of time, black-owned businesses will be able to get banks to listen and getting other financial institutions to listen and to think is that how can we help you all to level the playing field? So I'm encouraged by that.
Well,
it's unfortunate that it had to come under this tragedy, but this tragedy is going to lead to a different dialogue.
You think that might
very,
be
very well said. Very, very well said. I'd like to thank Earl Gray so much for being on our show. We know that you and Black Enterprise will continue to be a great success, and we look forward to watching you serve the community.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
Mr.
you both very much for the invitation.
Thank you very much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. Stephen.
Yes.
POP is not just a broadcast, podcast. It's a call to action. What should people be doing?
Well, you know, in these difficult times that lie ahead, and we've certainly been through for the past 3 months, we still have to stay strong and focused. You know, with 40 million people unemployed, the COVID pandemic still raging across America and abroad, civil unrest, protests, riots. You know, maybe as Earl Graves just said, there is a silver lining arising out of the Floyd murder with all types of people coming together. Maybe there is hope. So I'm trying to remain optimistic, and hopefully we can take heed to what's happening throughout the globe in terms of apparent unity and build on it. And hopefully we can pull ourselves out of this gigantic mess that we're in.
Great advice. For more information on our guests, you can like them on Facebook. Thanks for listening to our 2020 Blog Talk Radio Pulse of the People. Remember to check us out on Twitter and Facebook.
This is Pulse of the People.